Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
With another edition of the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. I am Richard Polinelli, and do not panic. Unlike usually when I lead off the show, it means Jim has vanished somewhere, but I am looking at my friend and business partner, Mr. Jim Christina, who is hiding out in the Sawtooth Mountains of Star, Idaho. How are you doing, Jim?
I am alive and kicking, and I gotta say, I'm looking at a mug that Bobby Jean is holding, and that's a handsome mug, Bobby. Handsome.
Yep.
Writer's Block mug.
Miss Bobby Jean is hanging out in the Sandia Mountain Range of Albuquerque, her royal quirkiness. But now, normally Jim would lead things off, but because of our guest this week and his book, which melted both Bobby and Jim's brains, they've decided to bring in the sci-fi guy to chart us through these dark and dangerous waters. So,
you know, it wasn't so bad. The milk wasn't bad. It was when it started dripping out of my ears. It became somewhat like Roy's, book. But
there you go. But before we get to our guest this week and his book, it is the first Thursday of the month, and that means the sound of a horse galloping up to the door is none other than Henry Park, who is here to tell us about all things Hollywood and Westerns. How are you doing, Henry?
I'm doing great, Richard. How are you doing?
Not too bad. We are ready. And if you will allow me a quick tombstone reference, it is time for you to skin that smoke wagon and get to work. Take it away, Henry.
We'll do that. Okay. Well, now, last Tuesday, I had a fabulous 4.5-hour lunch with one of my favorite actors in the world, Bruce Dern. Now, you know, because of the scruffy characters he often plays, it's easy to guess wrong on his background. But he was really in his home territory when he was playing Tom Buchanan in The Great Gatsby. He comes from two prominent old Illinois families, the Derns and the McLeishes. In fact, his father was Adlai Stevenson's law partner, and his great uncle was Archibald McLeish.
Oh, my.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Not what you'd get from Gunsmoke. Now, he told me wonderful stories about working with John Wayne on The Cowboys and working with Barbara Stanwyck and Betty Davis and so many more. I also spoke to a very interesting, very funny lady named Ann Randall, who was the leading lady in what turned out to be Audie Murphy's last movie and Bud Bedeker's last feature, A Time for Dying. Our mutual buddy C. Courtney Joyner and I did audio commentary on that one for Indicator this weekend. Now, actor Tommy Kirk passed away last week.
Yes. What a shame.
Yeah, nice guy. He did so many movies, especially as a kid at Disney, but I'm sure he's best remembered as the lead boy in Old Yeller. He also starred in the sequel, Savage Sam, and if he hadn't been arrested for marijuana possession, know what young lead he would have gotten to play?
Go ahead, hit it.
He was fired. The youngest son in The Sons of Katie Elder. Yeah, that's why Michael Anderson got that part, because they let him go. And, oh, I've got a link on the Roundup Facebook page to my True West article on Old Yeller, including my interview with Tommy, for anyone who wants to read it. We talked last month about Walter Hill's in-production Western, Dead for a Dollar, starring yes. Hamish Linklater, Christoph Waltz, Willem Dafoe, and Rachel Brosnahan. And it has wrapped, and it's in post-production. And there's a couple of strong leading men, neither of whom have ever done a Western before, and each are about to do their first. Alec Baldwin is set to star in and produce Rust. It's the story of a 13-year-old boy who is convicted of murder after accidentally killing a man. Baldwin plays the boy's grandfather, a legendary outlaw named Harland Rust, who busts the kid out of jail. Travis Fimmel plays the bounty hunter who is on their trail, or tail. And it also stars Francis Fisher, who, of course, was so good in Titanic and Unforgiven. And Nicolas Cage has announced two, count them, two new Westerns. In Butcher's Crossing, he plays an Ivy League dropout who heads to Colorado, becomes a buffalo hunter, and damn near loses his mind. It's based on a novel by John Williams. I'm assuming that's not the composer.
Probably not. Okay. But for Nicolas Cage, in the old losing way, his mind is not a bunch of a stretch.
They're shooting it from memory. And in another one, in The Old Way, Cage plays an aging gunfighter who must take it on the lam with his teenage daughter when the son of a man he killed arrives in town bent on revenge. It also stars Clint Howard and Nick Searcy from Justified.
Okay.
And yeah, please check out the November True West, which features my interview with writer-director Taylor Sheridan talking about his new Western series, Y-1883. And my review of the last and best performance Roy Rogers ever gave in McIntosh and TJ.
Great movie.
And I've also, isn't it? It's a wonderful, wonderful copy that they have out finally. And I have two new articles at the INSP Channel's blog. One's on John Wayne's younger leading ladies. And they just posted today Bonded Westerns, because everyone who ever played James Bond has starred in a Western. And you can read all about this and so much more, you know where? At www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Henry.
Sweet.
You know, I know.
Go ahead, Richard.
I was going to say, I know which movie Daniel Craig played in. It was Cowboys versus Aliens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But I didn't know Sean Connery was in. I remember now. Shenico. Yeah, he was in. Yeah.
Shenico, yeah.
Well, Shalico, and you know what? That's the real Western. But of course, he did Outland, which is really High Noon in Space.
Yeah,
right. And Roger Moore was in Maverick.
That's right. And what is it? Gold of the Seven Saints, with Clint Walker.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
He did a series, Alaska or the Alaskans, about gold mining town.
Right.
Timothy Dalton.
So, yeah, he's done more Westerns than most of them.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Henry, have you gotten over to the Skirball yet to see the Star Wars exhibit?
You know, I haven't been there. I just heard about that within the last day or two.
The pictures I've seen
looks fabulous.
Like, it's phenomenal. Yeah. Yeah, I hear it's like also something that I guess maybe could have gone to the Autry, but it didn't.
Hmm. But you know, it's about time that Nicolas Cage got around to Westerns, because he's ruined every other genre.
He hasn't done a musical yet, has he?
I don't know, but they keep putting him in these bad wigs. I don't know why they do that, but. Anyway.
Yeah. All right, Henry. Well, thanks for coming by, and we will catch you in about 4 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
Okay, sir.
Thank you, Richard. Okay. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
All righty. It is time to get to the book that has scared off both Bobby and Jim. But before we do that, I do want to mention, if you want to call in and talk to tonight's guest or to one of us for whatever reason, the number to call is 323-203-0815, and our engineer Sam will get you on the air, and you can just tell us what you need to tell us. But in the meantime, it is time to bring on our guest, who is a return guest. He was on about 3 years ago.
May 31st, 2018.
Yep. Yeah, not bad. There's Mr. Memory there for you. He has come up with a new series that is kind of be interesting to explain tonight, but we're going to give it a shot. The title of the book is The Thing from HR, and if you are a Lovecraft fan, this is a book you should read. So let us welcome Roy Griffiths. Roy, welcome to the show.
Hey, y'all. I hope you can hear me.
We hear you, just can't see you.
Yep. I'm an international man of mystery. Yeah, well, no, yeah. It's great to be back with you guys. I had a lot of fun when we were talking, gosh, yeah, almost three and a half years ago almost.
Yeah.
So now,
sir.
I just said, usually you do a form of alternate history, whether it's alternate history dealing with, World War One, World War Two area, or a science fiction alternate history. Where did you come up with this series that you've started with The Thing from HR? Because this is completely different from what you've done before.
Well, it's an interesting point, which I think explains why I don't really have a writing career. Because I apparently can't write the same kind of book over and over. I don't know if it's like very slow acting ADHD, but I tend to just sort of write what interests me. The book I talked about last time I was with the team was a 6-volume historical fiction series, yeah, which God love them, they were really nice about. But what actually happened in this case was, okay, you guys are writers, you know how it is. You just have ideas all the time. Mm-hmm. And we respond to our environment. Well, what happened for me was toward the end of 2019, my high school girlfriend died suddenly and sadly. She'd been my first love, my first fan. And we, we'd stayed in touch over the last, four decades. But I did not know how badly her life had gone off the rails. And because we were separated by half a continent and our lives took us in different directions. But she had always was called. She was always incredibly thrilled to hear about my writing and really was like my biggest supporter. So that surprised me a lot. That just wiped me out, to be honest. And then 6 months later, my mom died. So I wasn't feeling like writing anything. I mean, I love to write and it's basically all I've wanted to do since I was 10. But finally, after, about a year after Sandy's death, which I may get a book out of that too, I was sort of ready to write again. And but I didn't feel like I had it in me to write anything serious like By the Hands of Men, which I'd like to think is somewhat literary and I'd like to think important. At least it's not crap. But I really felt like I need to write something different. And one day I was, I have a day job, like so many of us do. And one of the things I was doing, I was on LinkedIn reading resumes and, looking for candidates for this position. And I noticed there was the trendy term of the moment that a lot of people had in their one-line description, their elevator pitch of themselves. Everybody was a thought leader. And I thought, wow, what more vague, useless, and unspecific term could somebody come up with for themselves? I'm a thought leader and I do interpretive naked tap dancing,
Mm-hmm.
So because I was bored, my mind started wondering, and I was just trying to imagine what would be the most pretentious title I could come up with to put on my LinkedIn. And this term sort of drifted into my mind. It was something about the blithering. And I said, okay, the blithering. And then it filled itself out. The blithering excrescence from beyond the stars. No idea where that came from.
Okay.
Right. And I said, well, I like the flow of it. And I asked myself the obvious question, which is, where would this person have worked? You know, and the obvious answer is clearly they worked for the Cthulhu organization in some fashion. And then it just started from there, because it struck me that everybody's got some kind of support team, you know, somebody's got to be writing the checks, and it just kind of blew up from there.
Yeah, but maybe you should kind of help our audience out who may not be familiar with Lovecraft's work. Kind of tell us a little bit about this book without giving away any, you know, spoiler alerts, but just kind of lay it out for us. What is going on with the thing from HR that has arrived on Earth, how he got there and what he's doing?
Okay. Well, for the Lovecraft virgins out there, and I know you're there, H.P. Lovecraft was this really peculiar guy who lived in Massachusetts area, I think, right at the turn of the 19th century, 1910, 1920. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he was disturbed by the modern world. So he had this very affected speech style, and he was also a loon, basically. He just imagined, you know, that there was this race of beings outside of time that were waiting for their chance to take over the Earth. And he would come up with these odd consonant type assaults of names. The most pronounceable right now is Cthulhu. And it was so unique and, you know, unhinged that it got a lot of people's attention, because not a lot of people had seen stuff like this. And so it just created this whole world of what he called the dark gods, the elder things, and people picked it up and ran with them. I mean, Robert Bloch wrote them, and I think Ray Bradbury may have been part of his crew. But you know, all the old pulp guys, they sort of recognized this mad genius that Lovecraft was putting up, and the fact he just created this incredibly, this huge mythological world nobody had really seen before.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Roy, I got to pause for just a minute because we got to pay a bill.
Sure.
Jim, who do we tell our studio engineer Sam to call up?
Well, I think right now, of course, you are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back with you right after this brief message from LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. You know, it seems everyone has a podcast these days, so how about you do this? How about you start your very own radio show that goes out live worldwide for nary a pittance? If you think you have an idea that would translate to a radio talk format, then stop waiting. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Click on the link that says Become a Host. Follow the easy instructions, and before you know it, you'll be the on-air live host of your very own talk show on LA Talk Radio. We have 50-minute slots available every day, including Sundays, so don't be shy. Join the many that have started their careers on the air. Join the hosts on LA Talk Radio at www.latalkradio.com.
And we are back. You are listening to the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. I'm Richard Polinelli. We got Jim and Bobby Jean with me, along with our guest tonight, Roy Griffiths. And we're talking about his book, The Thing from HR. And it's based in the...
It is a thing, I have to say. Any book that opens with a cup of warm blood.
Yeah. And at a desk, you know, he's drinking it at his desk. You know, we're in a different world.
Oh my God. I'm thinking to myself, Mr. Griffiths, where in the world did that come from? Because that had to have been a bad dream.
Well, and not too far in, he does mention Lovecraft. Roy, I got about 200 pages in. And then Richard gave me some hints about how I could maybe get a little background. So I went to research what Richard had suggested. And then I decided, you know what, I need to go back and start again at the beginning. Because some of where is sort of a mystery, I think will become clearer to me. And it does. It's a really fun read. I just wish that I knew more had more background to know some of what you're not parodying necessarily, but you're pointing to, that I think some readers who really understand this genre would go, oh, that's so cool that he's made that connection.
Well, gosh, I certainly hope so. But yeah, I realized during the break, I thought, man, I'm really making this sound dull. But the thing about Lovecraft is that it became known as cosmic horror. It was like this idea of this, you know, he loved these terminologies like the sanity shredding horror of the gibbering thing from beyond. And there's a whole lot of that. And you know, there's the typically the human characters are driven mad by this forbidden knowledge and that sort of thing. But I just it struck me, like I said, that obviously they got to have some kind of support organization. And I just, for some reason, they have these creatures called Shuggoths, which are pretty much they're the schlubs of this world. Apparently they tote, they fetch, you know, and they're apparently very fond of, and you guys are going to help me with this. My wife and I don't know how it's pronounced. Gibbering or gibbering?
I always went with gibbering.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
Gibbering.
Okay, good. I've been wrong my whole life. but no, apparently the Shuggoths are very famous for gibbering. And that sounded like the sort of guy who would be doing a job and not really be real sure of himself. So that's our hero, Narg. He is the thing from HR. And the story opens with him kind of happy in his job, which we refer to as HR for a while. And he has a secretary named Bug who might have a crush on him. But they're both Shuggoths, so they all are described in various otherworldly ways. Bug has three faces, and he mostly refers to her primary face. And they have hooves and stuff like that. And he's sitting down to a nice hot cup of the blood of a thrice damned man, I think that was. Mm-hmm. And the squawker on his desk goes off, and Bug answers it and then hisses at him and says, "It's the Bits." And that's when Narg realizes that is his uncle. They call him Beef Bits, but he's also known as the Blithering Excrescence from Beyond the Stars. And his uncle Beef Bits has a job for his nephew Narg. He needs Narg to take a little trip to Earth to investigate a spot of bother down there. And the reason he wants Narg to do it is because Narg took a minor in human studies about 400 years ago when he was in the university. Narg instantly feels, He has esteem issues. I think that comes with being a Shuggoth. And he's quite unsure of himself, but he and the reader get a quick view of some of the institutional structures that are part of the Cthulhu Amalgamated organization. Like one thing they do have is they sign 10-million-year contracts that are known informally as Hubbards. And you know, they contain all sorts of clauses and codicils. And one of my favorites was one that said, "Never give power to a cat."
Yes. I wanted you to talk about that.
Yeah. So, but then the story is how Narg goes to the Earth in he's not a trained field agent. He's, this is my John Le Carre thing, where they pick the guy out of, the typist pool and sent him over to East Berlin with no training. And that's kind of Narg. He goes down to Earth and he doesn't get much information, and he finds himself stuffed into a human body, and he's looking for his local contact, his native guide. And it goes from there. Narg and his native guide get to figure out what's going on, why he was sent, and, what is the purpose of a Shuggoth's life or something like that?
Well, you know, the local contact's name is Murph. And, you know, Narg is the primary character, but I think Murph really adds a lot to the story. And you and I were talking earlier this week, and I said when I first started reading this, it put me in the mind frame of Harry Harrison's Stainless Steel Rat. It's not the same story, but the style. And you chose to kind of take a kind of a humorous, comedic route with this. And I think that was the only way you could have told this story and not have it get so dark that people wouldn't want to get past the third chapter. I guess kind of describe the process you went through of deciding to go this route, because you were telling me you weren't sure if that was going to work at all, if you could maintain that kind of humor throughout the story, and you did. But what made you go that way?
Like I said at that time, I just didn't have it in me to write anything serious. You know, I mean, the By the Hands of Men is, it covered a lot of serious topics, and it really was a lot about choice and destiny and, how one affects the other. That's the whole theme of the books. What by the hands of men can make a heaven or a hell, and it's up to us to decide what to do. And the same with actually my alternative histories about the Islamic takeover of America. But because of all the all the emotions I'd gone through with my mom and with Sandy's death, I said, man, I just gotta write something wacky. I want to write, but I've just gotta write something nuts. And one of the things I told myself is I'm just gonna go for it. I'm really not gonna try not to censor myself. Mm-hmm. And I have written some comedic one acts, but I'd never written anything this long. And as a fiction writer, we all lie, but we want to lie in a really honest way. Mm-hmm. So I was actually trying to do that in this, and it almost became it became a little Swiftian to me, in that I was actually able to use NARG a little bit to make some comments, but part of the fun was, trying to really put my mind in this, put myself in the mindset of a character who, well, first, he's not as smart as he thinks, and that's always fun to write. having a character sort of discover he has more going on inside himself than he knows. And, Murph, also, in a way, he was sort of the audience. And just as an aside, I think every good movie has to have a character who's the audience, who's saying mm-hmm. what the audience is thinking and sort of reacting that way. I mean, that was Roy Scheider in Jaws, right? He was like, right. We need a bigger boat. We're nuts to be out here. That's exactly what the audience is like. So in a way, Murph is kind of the audience going, dude, this is messed up. So I guess in the process was, did it make me laugh? Did I think mm-hmm. it was funny? And a lot of it was just sort of the situation, little character. The situation is the character thinks he knows more than he does. And the other part, I guess, was it occurred to me that if some organization is so far from us and so far from Earth, their information is going to be really bad. About, sort of like the CIA trying to tell us what's going on in Afghanistan, which apparently they didn't really know much about. But it's kind of that idea of what information they have is sketchy, if not completely inaccurate. But, they're going to proceed as if it's correct, and then they will get themselves into a number of interesting situations, like not realizing that carrying a naked woman out of a burning house is the sort of thing that's going to make people talk.
Yeah. Bobby, you had a quick question?
I do. One of the fun things I think is I figured out pretty quick what a meat suit is. And and then as he's living in that meat suit and he doesn't really know what eyes are or what ears are, or, he can't stand up. He just has physical challenges of being who he is in the body he was accustomed to and suddenly being in a human body. And I got all that. That was like, oh, I can follow this. I know where we are now.
Thanks.
And I thought that was really fun writing and very fun reading all of that, which is throughout the book, as he struggles to try to figure out how to make it all work, you know.
Okay, we're going to have to pause for just a second because we got another bill to pay. And this time, Sam, if you would take us into telling us a little bit about Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published, and right now we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back with the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio and our guest, Roy Griffiths. And if you want to talk to Roy, there's still time to call in at 323-203-0815. Give us a call and we'll get you on. Roy, you know, it's I want to talk about the ending to this book, but I can't because we're going to give it away. But it's I did like the way you wrapped it up, because despite all the gore and despite all the darkness and despite all the destruction, you kind of gave us a happy ending, which is not easy to do when you're working in Lovecraft's universe, you know. and you've kind of set the stage for what's to come. And I think you've already got two books laid out for this, and the next two books coming up in the series. Is that right?
Yes, sir. The next one is called The Auditors of Doom. Because I think a lot of us have worked in the corporate environment, so we sort of have some similar experiences. And I didn't want it to become like this complete Dilbert thing, but I use that as a starting point, and especially, you know, take the evolution of the character. That happy ending, you know, if your characters don't grow and change, it becomes a little stale. I don't know about you guys, but I hate movies and I hate books where I spend 2, 4, 6 hours with it, and at the end of it, I just go, so what?
Yeah.
You know, I hate that. And I didn't want that, and I don't want to. I, as a reader, I don't like that. And as a writer, I'm not going to subject somebody to that. So, but a lot of this, I'm a pantser in like the worst sort of way. I know kind of where my book is going to start, and, you know, start, back in that place, the other world, however you want to call it. And I knew vaguely where it was going to end. And then it just, all those other pieces just happened as I went along. And, but, you know, I was willing to follow Narg sort of on his own journey, where he learned a little bit about himself. And, and, you know, as well as Murph learned something. And I particularly like that idea that, you know, this is sort of the anti-Seinfeld. Didn't they say in Seinfeld, no hugs, no lessons? Well, I don't agree with that. Yeah. Let's see. I've got The Auditors of Doom, and that's finished. It's getting copy edited, and I've got a cover for it. I'll probably put that up for pre-sale here pretty soon. And the third book is called The Break Room of 1,000 Nightmares, which...
I've been in that room.
Yeah.
I think we all have.
I've had lunch there more than once.
my son gave me that title. I said, okay, man, that's a great title. So I'm about, 3/4 of the way through with that. I've got maybe 100 pages to go on that. And also pretty happy with that. So, you know, again, to speak about the fact that I have no career, I'm going to finish these. They're open-ended. I don't feel like I only have three books in it. But I won't write a book just to sort of pound it out. I've got to feel a little something for, I got to feel like I have something to say, even if it's, you know, wrapped in ick and goo and can't remember any of the terms, splooge and whatever else that was, you know.
Splooge is good, yeah.
Yeah, splooge is good.
Splooge
There's
is
lots
good.
Of splooge.
Let me ask you a question, Roy, before you go on any further. When you're writing, do you allow, I mean, we talk about this all the time in this show, and especially with pantsers. Pantsers are like the infinite writer as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Richard's one-on-one, you know. Do you allow your characters to dictate the direction of the storyline?
Completely. You know, sort of almost like, I think I said this about writing By the Hands of Men. I was a lot smarter than I realized, because there would be stuff showing up. I go, wow, that's like, you know, profound and smart. And where did that, I don't know where I got that from. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it was the same sort of thing. I mean, Bobby talking about Narg in the meat suit, that brought up a whole lot of stuff. And sometimes him flopping around in the meat suit would just take him places. And suddenly it was like, well, that works. That's important.
That's a great phrase, incidentally, meat suit.
The meat suit.
Well, I like hairless apes who fling their poo. I kind of like that.
Hairless, the hairless apes to the land of the hairless apes. I noticed there's something in the writing, and I don't know how, if this goes like to Audible or something, you know, in the writing, there's lots of things in capital letters, and they somehow, you know, that brings attention to that. And then in parentheses, we have a lot of comments, I guess, from Ed, who I'm assuming is the editor. And some of that gives us some clues or fills in a little background or helps explain something. And I wondered a little bit about that. That's very interesting in process. How did that idea come about? It's a little like a Greek chorus or something, you know, what the editor has to say.
Well, actually... because one of the things it struck me that Narg, you know, he has that sort of academic background that he refers to. And there was just this idea of this guy that he really wants to be taken seriously. So, of course, if he left his, you know, dark and dreary and, you know, terrible beyond description, insanity shredding million year contract thing and went down to the hairless apes, he'd be like, my idea was sort of like the guys who would go explore Africa in the 1800s, and they would come back and they would write, you know, here's the story of my, you know, my journey to the darkest continent. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of stuck with me, the idea that he would want to be telling a story, and that, because he wanted that, that academic, that recognition, I guess, that he would try to do it as an academic thing. So that just kind of came out of nowhere. But then I just like the idea of the editor, and I guess Greek chorus or voice of God is a really good thing, because it was also a way to put in some of the funnier stuff.
Yeah.
With Narg trying to be self-effacing and not really succeeding very well.
Yeah, and trying to work his way around without knowing what he was there, you know, what he was there to do in the first place. That was great, because he's blundering into all sorts of situations with no clue how to get out of them. So that was a lot of fun. Now, the last time I was in charge of the show, I forgot to ask the question. So we're going to make sure we don't do that this time. So, Bobby, if you would ask Roy the question.
Oh, I'm happy to. So, you know, this is called the Writer's Block, and we love to hear from our guests to tell us, do you get it? Do you not get it? If you get it, how do you get through it? And any advice that you might have.
I don't typically get writer's block. Although, as I said, you know, losing, you know, the death of my girlfriend, who was so important to me when I was growing up, and then mom in 6 months, that really kicked my slats in. I don't think that counts as writer's block. You know, it was a new way to lose, to go on a diet. I call the Lose Weight While You Weep. That was, you know, but not really. I mean, I'll start things that don't work, but ever since I turned to novels, I haven't had writer's block. What I do have is lack of time. Mm-hmm. You know, because once I started a book, apparently I can't shut up, because the first book of By the Hands of Men is supposed to be one book, and now it's turned into like 6 volumes and 500,000 words, and there's a book 7 waiting to happen too. You know, I just, and especially, and you guys probably know this, once I start a book, I'm in that world. And I have to come out every now and then to, you know, brush my teeth and feed the cat and go to work. but even then, you know, it's there all the time. So that probably helps me not get the block. And I think the other thing, honestly, is that I don't, again, since I started writing novels, I don't write anything I don't want to write. When I had a stint in Hollywood and working on screenplays and stuff, and there were all these people who had opinions on what I was writing, and you know, I remember this award-winning, actually, your Henry was it, I think, the Western guy, I believe I met him when I picked up my Milius Award for screenwriting. Well, that script had been around in Hollywood for a bit, and it's set in the Korean War, and I remember some 25-year-old MBA was saying to me, you know, we got to check and see if it's okay to have the Chinese and the North Koreans be the bad guys. And I'm thinking, did you even read this damn thing? You know, so, but once I started writing novels, no, I just write what I want. And I could be smarter about it, I guess, but, so I don't have a writer's block. And I hope I'm not going too long here. The advice I have, and I've given this to anybody, is, seat of the pants to the seat of the chair, you know, yeah. old screenwriter dictum. You sit down and it becomes like a muscle. And, you know, I get up at 4 in the morning to work on stuff, because by the end of the day, I'm wiped out and I have no energy or ambition. So I get up at 4 and I start writing it. And the longer I did that, the easier it became. You know, it's like I trained myself, or I convinced, you know, I proved to my brain I was serious about this. And I found that even if I didn't know what to say, if I put my fingers on the keys, it would come.
Yeah.
So,
Roy, I got to jump in because we are running a little long on this segment. We need to take a break. Sam, if you could help us tell people about Creative Edge Publicity.
I'll take a note.
Earth to Sam. I think our engineer has stepped out of the building.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know, there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
And we'll have Bug come down and flog me real quick, because that was on the host for not setting Sam upright.
So that also, the email or the website is wrong. It's www.creativeedgepublicity.com. Now it has changed.
Okay. All right. So note that.
Hey, Jeff, for next week.
There we go. Now, Roy, you brought up real quick, and we're going to have to do this real quick because we're getting close. You brought up your screenwriting days, and you and I are taking a nice little journey separately, but similarly, with an agent trying to get 2 of our books adapted into screenplays. And I think we're both finding out just how long and arduous that process can be, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's it is like, you know, being a shuggoth there because, you know, it's just you're just at the mercy of all these dark, malevolent forces that you really don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Sam and Frodo's journey was a lot less stressful than what we're going through, honestly, because it's just, it's crazy what they're doing and how slow this thing is. And, you know, you think you've taken three steps forward and all of a sudden you're two steps backwards. So what would you recommend to any writer before they get into this process so they can survive it with their, you know, mental health intact at least?
First, don't quit your day job, you know, seriously, because writing, if you want to do it well, I believe it does take something out of you. I mean, if you want to just pump out crap, if you want to do the dinosaur porn or whatever it is, you know, which it has a market and it's amusing to some people, but I'm not going to say it's going to change anybody's life. But if you want to do it well, I think you got to have something going on and removing some of the stresses of like food and shelter are good, and I would say probably try to write something you know you want to see, because then you're gonna know the tropes and the shortcuts and the what people expect, but at the same time also try to make it new and original. Don't do, you know, Transformers 20, because you can only blow up so many things. That doesn't mean you can't tell a familiar story, because there are some of those stories are classics because they really speak to a lot of what goes on. And I think most of all, try to be emotionally honest. And regardless of the story and the trappings, if it's not emotionally grounded and if it doesn't take your viewer, your reader on an emotional journey, it's, you know, it's just junk food and people, it's going to be really disposable and it's not going to be memorable. Nobody's going to want it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you were mentioning that the person who asked if the Chinese and the North Koreans had to be the bad guys in yours. And, you know, I had a similar experience with mine. They're wondering, what if we want to cast Will Smith? And I'm like, sure. If you can explain how Will Smith's grandparents are both Russian immigrants, you go right ahead and you cast Will Smith. You know, it's like, read the script, guys. Yeah.
Totally. They're black Russians, clearly.
Yeah, oh, clearly, yeah. You know, we can swing that, sure. Why
black,
not?
Black Russians.
Black Russians, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Roy, we are running up against the clock, so before we go this week, I want to thank you first for coming back and putting up with this. But why don't you let us know where people can find you on the web and how they can get a hold of you if they want to tell you how wonderful your books are.
Sure. It's pretty simple. I'm at roymgriffiths.com. That's M like Madison and then Griffiths, GRIFFIS.com. My books are on Amazon, and I just discovered they're actually available on Walmart too. And that's how you can find me. And yeah, actually I'm on Facebook at Roy M. Griffiths Storyteller. You know, I'll be here writing some more.
There you go. There you go. Well, thanks for coming back and hang on after the show, because we do a little after the show is over chatting. So we'd love to talk with you a little bit more. Say some things we can't say on the air, that kind of stuff.
Sure. No.
We have started the month of October off perfectly with a nice monster story. So we'll give kudos to the bookie for that. And she's keeping the theme going next week, because next week's guest is J.P. McLean, and her book is Bloodmark, about a woman with a very special superpower. Right. So that's sounding pretty interesting.
She was great the last time she was on, too. So she's a good guest.
Yes.
She's one of them Vancouver people, eh?
Oh, there you go. There you go.
And that book is actually being released on October 19th. So we actually are having her like right before the book release.
Wow. Well, we'll get everybody all revved up for that one when it comes out. Want to thank Henry for being on earlier. Roy, again, for being with us. Jim, Bobby, thanks for soldiering through the book and surviving the brain melt. Definitely want to thank the bookie. She does a great job as always. So she definitely gets the big kudos. And Sam, the man who without him, we would not have an LA Talk Radio. So we want to thank Sam for his work back in the studio. And I think that will wrap up another week here. So we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.